हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 61. Sri Govindabhasya, Siddhanta. So kamayata. He desired, may I become many. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.6. This desire for creation can refer only to Paramatma. But because it's not that the one or the jiva becomes many. It's not that he is expanding and all these things. I mean, of course, you can talk about, but I doubt that the Upanishads would be talking about grihastha life. Right? Seeing that the Upanishads, the means you have the standard, classification of the scriptures into the paravidya, or transcendental knowledge, aparavidya meaning a material knowledge but engageable in the service of para, and you have avidya, which means knowledge which is not connected to para, right? So that's your standard definition. According to the Upanishads, there's two kinds of knowledge. There is paravidya and avidya. So we can see is that they're not overly kind. So we can understand it's not that he desired that I may become many, meant he wanted to get married and have children. So I doubt that this is the definition to be applied to this verse here. Another statement is tadatmanam swayam akuruta. He made himself. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7. The person who acted as creator is also the object created. This indicates that the Lord is agent and the object acted upon. And so that means this: he being the source of everything, then without him nothing will function. So what is there that is acted upon is him also. Because otherwise, where does it come from? Because we'll make the thing, well, he's transcendental in that. Yes. But that still doesn't mean that he, being everything, being God, isn't still the ingredients of creation. Because otherwise, where do they come from? Right? Because then by saying it's not him, you reduce his position. They'll say, no, if you say it is him, it reduces his position. Because then he is the material aspect. But the point is then, if it's not him, then that means he isn't the greatest. He isn't the source of everything. He isn't the existence of everything. You understand? So what it is it's his energies. And even that, the transformed energies. He deals directly with the internal potency, and he's indifferent towards the external. Right? So the internal potency transforms to the external, depending upon his mood. Does that make sense? Yes.
Our philosophy is Shakti Parinambada.
Yes.
However, Shakti is coming from the Lord.
Yes.
Means he transformed at one point, and then the Shakti came out from him.
No, but he's still himself, even though that happens. That's that verse in the Ushupanishad, Om Purnamidah Purnamidam. Means he's the complete whole. Anything that expands from him is perfect and complete, and he still remains the complete whole. So that's the whole point, is that in the logic of Shakti, then what you're saying would be correct. But the thing is he's Shaktiman. So it's not that he transforms. These energies are already always there. It's just whether he manifests them or not. Does that make sense? Yeah.
But the same thing they say.
Meaning?
More or less. That the Lord transformed.
Yes, but the point is he doesn't. That's Brahma Parinama Bhava.
Yes, but if we take the logic, when we say that he transforms, it means he's energies. Because he's Shaktiman, everything belongs to him. In the same way, we can say that he is transforming, even though he remains.
Yes, it means if you're looking at that from this point here, is that he is the agent and the object acted upon. You can say like that. But it's not that when he transforms, he's no longer himself.
The same way the energy.
Yes. But the point is that why is this a hard point to understand? Because the thought is if he transforms, then he's something less. But he's still who he is.
But the same thing would be correct regarding the potency. Because when they transform, they're not less. They even more. Can we say?
Yes, but I'm saying, what's the angle? I'm not sure what the approach is.
I'm trying to understand the faulty arguments of the Mayavadis. Because they can be correct, in a sense.
No, but it's better not to do that. It's just like, okay, you have the person who is your... You know, how you say, lifelong dedicated enemy, right? Okay, and so then whatever they do is to make sure that you're getting some trouble. So now in that, then looking at that, because we do have these faults, that's false. So maybe they are kind of right up to a point and all that, but is that going to actually work? Yeah, so the point is you have to understand... who you're dealing with. That's why Madhvacharya was very careful to not give them any, because the point is they can't understand this point, so there's no use discussing it with them. Because only with devotion you can understand this Achintaveda Veda Tattva. But the point is it's all Krishna, yes. And so in that way, because his energy is coming from him, it'll have the same quality as him. So just as he expands and remains as he is, then the internal potency expands and remains as it is. Or the pradhan expands and remains as it is. You know, so you'll have that. But then the problem is you have to be careful in the context that the impersonalist, the Mayavadis don't then catch on that point, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So you have to be careful of what you're saying. Like that. You know, it's like someone who's in a more mature position can do it, but let's say you mentioned it to a child, now the child wants to do it, but they can't. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that one has to be very careful of the, because it's all Krishna, so you have to choose the proper angle. Otherwise, if you use the wrong angle for the wrong thing, it doesn't work out very well. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, a tamarind chutney, you know, well made is a first class chutney, right? But now if you have some lasagna, you understand? So there's nothing wrong with the chutney, nothing wrong with it, but you can't put them together.
So that's what devotees sometimes do, that's why it's very distasteful?
Yeah, it means that if you understand the things, then it's... You use the right thing in the right time. Yes, you mean about the lunches? Yes, definitely, definitely. I just heard of one that was, what do you call it? Puchkas? Spaghetti. Chinese noodles. Sushi. Fried rice. And, that's all I remember. Yes, because it's all nice things. That's the thing, is each one is a very nice preparation. So the person's thinking that these are all nice preparations, so you want to make something nice, let's put them all together, but they don't match. Does that make sense? So that's the ideas that we see here, is that he is becoming the many, and it's him who is, but at the same time he's different. So that's the difficulty that will be there for the Mayavadis, is they can only understand exclusive oneness. So that it's either that it's all him, But then, you know, how does he, the many, and he is separate? That's going to be a problem for them. So at that point, then it'll fall apart. That's why then they don't understand Shakti Parinamabad. They try to use Brahma Parinamabad, that Brahman has transformed. But then the problem of Brahman transforms, how is it non-changeable? And then what is it having transformed? Because then if it is like that, then technically, yes, Brahman is there and the jivas are there. And illusory energy is there. And Brahman is separate from that. But at the same time, it's the source of those. So they're also real. You know, does that make sense? So if you just take it only at that slight aspect, then you have to understand is that he's transforming, but he's transforming as his energies, because he and his energies are non-different. Yes.
So the problem here is like, because when we say when we say Brahman is transforming, then the nature is we apply the incompleteness with the material aspect
yes.
to the we.
Yes, yes, we're taking the incomplete and applying it to the complete, because
can we call that Arofya?
Yes, because we're Shakti, so we'll look everything from the viewpoint of Shakti. And so as far as Shakti goes, yes, there'll be these aspects. Because we have to remember it here, we're saying it transforms, but then it's the same. Yes, but also no. Because what happens when milk transforms into yogurt? It can't transform back. So therefore, Krishna can transform these, but they can't transform back. So the material energy doesn't go back into the other, it's always there. So yogamaya is yogamaya and this is there, but there's a transformation. You know, but anything that we see is no, but they're all still the same. That's because it's Krishna. So it's the Krishna aspect that those points of the philosophy work. But as far as the specifics, then it doesn't. At the same time is, because of that, we see then we can see Mahamaya and see Yogamaya. Does that make sense? So the deity form used for Yogamaya and for Mahamaya is the same deity of Durga and her, you know, tiger with all the arms. They don't have a different deity because it's actually the same person. You understand? So it's just a matter of how you view. Is that, you know.
Manish.
Yes.
So then the energies, they are existing permanently and simultaneously.
Permanently and simultaneously. They're always there. That's why Krishna says the opening point is never a time that I didn't exist, you are the kings. Mm-hmm. They've always been there.
Okay, then if they are always been there, then why is this particular word transformation being used? Because transformation means at a particular point in time that has taken place, you know, but that has not happened. Because
no, but the point is why do you need a particular point in time? Because if you're dealing with the unlimited, then that doesn't apply. This point is our understanding is limited. Yeah? So that's the whole point is that Krishna, being who he is, then he can decide. He says here, he desired may I become many. Right? Because they're all him, but there's a difference between it's just him and it's manifest. Means he is who he is, the complete whole, and he's unlimited, but at the same time as he's unlimitedly expanding and manifesting more and more. So whatever Vaikuntha planets are there at this point, the next moment there's more. But all those exist eternally. They're just being manifest.
So can then we equate transformation to manifestation?
You can, but then will you understand what's happened? Because manifestation just means there's more. Right? Because we'll use that in connection with... It's like a meme or something. Right? Like that you light one candle from another, and that way all these candles are there. So there's non-difference, though they manifest. But transformation, we use milk into yogurt. Right. In other words, you have to acknowledge and accept the fact that through your own intelligence you will not understand everything. It may be shocking, but it's a reality. And then it's only by Krishna's mercy that if he's pleased with your approach to these things in a devotional way, he'll reveal. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is because it's not about the knowledge of it, it's about the ability to interact and the experience gained from that. That's why we do something. Right? Something goes wrong, it's like the whole world's empty. Right? Is the whole world empty? Everyone else is going on perfectly fine. In fact, most people don't even know you're having a problem. Huh? Yes. So that, you know, but what we're having to point out is that there's some various things going on. So now, because of experience, that's why it's empty. But by fact, it's not empty. So the fact isn't as important as the experience. But the point is as long as our experiences are focused on the material, therefore we use intelligence to break that, right? What did Uddhava use to try to break the feeling of separation of Nanda and Yashoda? Right? Using tattva. So, therefore, but they couldn't because it's attached to Krishna. But you use the same thing. If it's a different flavor of attachment, then it will switch it. But now, if you have your attachment is material, then it definitely breaks things down. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point of it. Tattva is used to break it down, but that's not actually the point. It's not that, oh, you know all this, that's the whole thing. The knowledge of it is so that you give up the attachment to the material and turn your attention to the spiritual. So the experience of the whole place being empty. So you're experiencing an unlimited experience, right? The world's empty. It's unlimited, right? But how big are we? We're 1,000, the tip of the hair. How do you get this unlimited? You understand? So if we're going by just this logic, how does it work? But by experience, it's there. You understand? So it's a matter of the experience of it. That's realization, not the fact of it. You know what I'm saying? Facts, unless they're bringing out Krishna, are really overrated. So you know what I'm saying? So logic is one of them. So that's the intellectual disease is the logic, their attachment to that. You know, the Kshatriyas, they're attached to their power, righteous to their influence with money. You understand? The Shudras with their expression in all this. You know, they have to express. You know, everybody else is miserable, but they're expressing. You know, it's like, yeah. Does that make sense? Yes.
We're trying logically to break down our attachments.
Yes.
However, as soon as we're out of the classroom, it rebuilds like within a second.
Yes.
So, is that normal?
I'd say it's pretty good. It takes a whole second. That means 11 moments. You know, probably if you go back in time, it was less than that. You know, the first moment. You know, so it's progress. yes, because it's then. Then that's where manana comes in, because now we contemplate what we've heard. Because when we're hearing, then we're absorbed in Bhagavatam and in the Vedic literature, so we're on the transcendental platform. We're experiencing the transcendental platform. That's why it's nice. Right? But then that's hearing. Now we have to apply it. So then when we leave the classroom, then all, as you said, the whole, you know, material existence rebuilds itself, you know. And so we have to accept that that's the potency of the Lord. Otherwise, how does something so big rebuild itself so quickly, you know? And so then, now we use the knowledge we've heard and apply it to the situations we're in. So we're hearing. So then the spiritual reality becomes constructed, you know, for us, and the material reality becomes deconstructed. Then we walk out of the gate. It's some mystical thing about the gate, right? Must be the, try going out one of the other apertures or something, see if there's any difference. You know, like that, you know. The gate's still waiting for you to come, you know, but you didn't. You know, like the Vindhya Mountains waiting for Agastya or something, you know, like that. And so then now as it constructs itself, then you think of the philosophy and deconstruct it. Right? But that's only part, that's the minor part, or the junior part, you could say. The senior part, or the, you know, the most important part, is why do that except for to please Krishna? So in other words, if we're less materially absorbed, that means we can be more spiritually absorbed. So being less materially absorbed on its own is not a glory. It's pious. It's recommended in that it's the activities to be used in Krishna consciousness. So for those who aren't interested in Krishna consciousness, the same activities are still being recommended. But the purpose is for devotional service, right? Just like the different things in the kitchen are there for cooking. They're not for some other purpose. Right? When you see someone, you know, out in the living room with your favorite knife trying to unscrew, you know, some screw in the wall, one is not very happy. Right? It means you're supposed to go into the garage and get a screwdriver, not into the kitchen and get a knife. Right? But at the same time, it's if you're, you know, are invited over for dinner and you went into the kitchen and they're in there, you know, with screws and screwdrivers and hammers and saws and all that and to do with the cooking, then you might not be as inspired. So, wow, how did we get into that one? Oh, because it was about the deconstructing. But so, by taking it out of the realm of you can only be attached when it's in its nice functional form, but when you take it apart, then it's not attractive, right? Unless of course you're a nerd, then you know all that you can do all that. But then the whole point is that unless it's connected to Krishna, is not of value. Oh, that was the whole point. Is that we're using the religious aspect without Krishna. It's like using the various tools, you know, in without its actual purpose. Is that correct? Yeah. So religion's only purpose is to be engaged in Krishna's service. So for us, dharma means sad-dharma. But you have to understand that, because dharma means you can function in dharma without Krishna. That's what the material world is. Right, so for someone who's irreligious to be religious, they would consider that spiritual. But actually, spiritual is beyond religious, and transcendental is beyond spiritual. Right, so unless we make all those distinctions, then we may not get to the transcendental platform. Right, so if you just think of Krishna, do things for Krishna, you're automatically there. It's easy. So if you keep it very simple like that, it works. As soon as you complicate or make more sophisticated your material existence and interaction, you have to make the philosophy as sophisticated to match. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if we don't, then there'll be a problem. Because then, materially, we're more advanced than our spiritual understanding. So there won't be a balance. So then you see, the emphasis is on all their, you know, practical material life. They're devotees, they do their sadhana, but like you said, once they go out the door, then they just click into material life. But because spiritual is more powerful, then gradually one will be, you know, dragged along. But it will slow it down, because if you're not focused on the spiritual, then one will take shelter of the material. And so then one can continue, you know, in the material world that way. So,
yeah. This transformation is generally in connection with the material aspect of the creation.
The transformations, Yes, it's in relationship to, because it's the internal that transfers into the external. Because in the spiritual world, do you need to define transformation? Is it an important aspect? No, there it's only variety. You know, so it's only when we're discussing the material do we have to bring it up, because we're attached to it. We think it's real. In other words, real meaning the experiences, the needs, all these things are actually things of the soul. They're real, but they have nothing to do with the soul. Does that make sense? You know, it's nothing to do with us. So that's the... Yes.
I'm not sure about the Sanskrit, but what would be the difference between vikara and parinama? Because they use those terms, but is it the same or different?
I know a parinama means transformation, and vikara means illusion. So that's the point, is that parinama means it's real, it transforms into something else real. While vikara means you start with real, but the transformation is illusory. So it doesn't actually exist. So as far as the Maya bodies go, whatever's here and whatever we're doing does not exist. That's why it's actually just Buddhism. It's not a Vedic philosophy. Like, as the Vedic philosophy is, all exists, it's just all Brahman. You don't worry about the particular material qualities that people are attached to in dealing with the material energy. You just know it's all there. So it's all that homogenous Brahmanness, though it has its variety, but its value, it doesn't matter. You know, that's the meaning of the verse where it says that, is it sands, pebbles, and gold? Is that the three, or?
Yeah, Gita.
Yeah, in the Gita. That you don't make a distinction. They're all, you know, equally as valuable or not valuable. It means it's just they're all Brahman. That's the common point between them. Not an economic or an intellectual or a a point of power or money or expression or, you know, all these different things. You don't impose upon it a material value. In other words, it's just Brahman in varieties. So since you have no material need, you don't need to distinguish them other than, you know, that you don't bump into them or something. You know? In other words, it's easier to walk on the sand instead of the rocks. Right? Does that make sense? And the gold will be really hard to walk on, because while you're walking on it, people are trying to grab it and put it into their bag and run away. So, you know, it would be a little tricky.
And if you drop something, it disappears.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And if you drop a grain of sand on your foot, it's a less problem than if you drop a gold ingot. Right? I think they're 30 kilos, one. Unless that's silver. I don't remember. But those blocks, you know, can't remember what they are. No. No one has a few of those in their office. Use them in the morning for lifting weights. Like that.
Previous yugas.
In previous yugas, yeah. Okay, so we're good. So in other words, it's all the Lord. At the same time, he's different from that all. That's the important part. It's not just that he is everything, but it's also he's different. Because otherwise, if he's not different, how is there rasa? How is there interaction? Right? He's conscious, so everything that's expanded from him is also conscious. Yes.
And his energy? It's different?
Yes.
Or not different? Not from him, from whatever it transformed.
Is Yogamaya not different from Mahamaya?
Yes.
Yeah, so they're same and different. But that quality comes from Krishna. See, Krishna maintains that himself. The energies are only maintained because of Krishna. In other words, like, we're conscious, but it's not that we're maintaining our consciousness. It's Krishna is, because he's consciousness.
But the energy, that's understood. Yogamaya is different from Mahamaya. But when Mahamaya transforms into everything that we see.
Yes, so she as a person is still different from all this. It's not that you walk on this and ooh, ah, like that, you know. So it's just sometimes vivid works. Okay? You know, she has to, what do you call it? Twice a week she has to wash her hair to get rid of all the, you know, humans crawling around. So you don't have... Universal form has all that aspects to it, because it's all there, but it's the subtle form of it.
And we also said that it's imaginary form.
It's imaginary because you can see it through the mind. So I'm saying seeing things with the mind is imaginary. Because it's imagery. But at the same time, it's not that it's not real. Because we're seeing, okay, the mountains are as this and that. But the point is that these are just his potencies that are making that happen. And they may come from there. But they're not him. So that's why it's imaginary. That's why it's the material form. But it's still the point is it's him. That's where you have that's the point of your transformation. That's the point between the original and formal, and then the instrumental and the material.
Yeah. Is it not that the mind is able to conceive of a particular object because that object is existing in reality?
The object he can, because there's an object existing he can think of, or he can put together. Like I mentioned this to one girl, you can't think of something that's not there. Well, what about, you know, one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater? But the point is there is such thing as one eye. There are things with horns. There are things that are purple. There are things that are flying. There are things that eat people. Right? So you can just put all that together. It's like a dream. So it's based on actual things that have been experienced. Just you may put it together in a strange way. Okay. How can one enter the already existing as the doer be acted upon to become something created? This takes place by transformation, parinamat. There is no contradiction in the Lord because his position of being changeless is not in conflict with a particular kind of modification. See, that's the thing is within him, it's not a contradiction. Within Shakti, it is. Here is the truth of the matter. Brahman has three Shaktis according to...
Footnote 26.
Srila Prabhupada's purport enumerates the sutras that indicate Parinamabad. In the first verse of the Brahma Samhita...
Sutra.
Oh, Brahma Sutra is Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Oh, okay. We must now inquire into the absolute truth. The second verse immediately answers, Janmadyasya yataha. The absolute truth is the original source of everything. Janmadyasya yataha does not suggest that the original person has been transformed. Rather, it clearly indicates that he produces this cosmic manifestation through his inconceivable energy. This is already clearly explained in the Bhagavad Gita 10.8. Where Krishna says, Matas sarvam parvartate, from me everything emanates. This is also confirmed in the Taittiriya Upanishad 3.1.1, Yato va imani bhutani jayante. The supreme absolute truth is that from which everything is born. Similarly, in the Mundaka Upanishad 1.1.7, it is stated, Yatorna nabhi shrijate grinate cha. The Lord creates and destroys the cosmic manifestation. It is stated, Yatorna... Oh, no, we just said that. As a spider creates a web and draws it back within itself. All of these sutras indicate the transformation of the Lord's energy. It is not that the Lord undergoes direct transformation, which is called Parinamavad. However, being very anxious to protect Srila Vyasadeva from criticism, Shankaracharya became a pseudo-gentleman and put forward a theory of illusion, Vivartavad. Shankaracharya concocted this meaning of Parinamavad. By word juggling, he endeavored very hard to establish Parinamavad as Vivartavad. Right, so the transformation means it's actually an illusion. It's not there because the Lord doesn't transform. He's trying to establish that point of non-transformability. But the point is being the absolute truth, his energy is transformed, he remains the same. So that's why it's Shakti Parinamabhat instead of, you know, Brahma Parinamabhat. So in Brahma Parinamabhat, then they'll bring it out, it actually means Vivartabhat, or illusion. Right? There is no transformation. We just think it's there. But the point is if it's not there, this is the fun part. If it's not there, it's not real, we're not real, we're not actually having this conversation, all this is illusion, then what's the seriousness about how important this is? Because it doesn't matter, because it doesn't exist. Does that make sense? So then it's just accepting that it doesn't exist, but technically you don't even have to accept it doesn't exist, because it doesn't exist anyway, whether you accept it or not. Right? Does that make sense? So we can see is that it's not a real philosophy, because there's no such thing as a vacuum. So that's why it's pointed out. The Shankara's philosophy is just transformed, means the same, right? Transformed Buddhism. So Buddhism is an illusion, so the transformation of illusion is more illusion. So that, therefore, for him, this Parinama, then is illusion. Because that's what he's transforming. So... Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila 6.172. Here is the truth of the matter. Brahman has three Shaktis according to Shruti and Smriti. Pradhana Kshetra Gya Patir Guneshaha. The Lord is master of the Gunas, master of Prakriti and the Jiva. Svetasvatara Upanishad 6.16. Parashya Shaktir Vividhaya Shruyate Swabhaviki Jnana Balakriya Cha. The Lord is glorified as having various intrinsic shaktis of jnana, bala, and kriya. Svetasvatara Upanishad 6.8. Vishnu Shakti para prokta kshetra gya kya tata para avidya karma samgya jnanya tritiya shakti ruchate. The Lord has a superior energy, another energy called the jiva, and a third energy, the material energy, called avidya karma, Vishnu Purana.
Which one of them and how they are related?
Means the jiva, the inter...
First it says gunas prakriti jiva, then it says jnana, bala, and kriya, then it says superior energy, jiva, and material energy.
The third one speaks basically of internal potency, external potency, and the tatastha, marginal potency. So, that is the confusion. For me, the same question.
Means?
The first statement, it speaks of three shaktis.
Yes.
Gunas, Prakriti, and Jiva. The second one speaks of Jnana, Bala, and Kriya. These are another three shaktis. And then, the final one speaks of internal potency, external potency, and the marginal
potency. But who's the master of Prakriti? So you have Chit Achit Ishwar. Right? Means gunas means the material energy. Right? Master of Prakriti is the Lord Himself. And then you have the Jiva. Right? Yeah. Then Jnana, Bala, and Kriya means you have the. You're dealing with the performance of the energies. The Lord is glorified as having various intrinsic shaktis, right? So the jnana means the knowledge, those things, the bala, the strength, the ability to do, and kriya, then the action itself, all those are going to be there to glorify Him, right? It's all going to be about Him. So He's still there as the Lord, then He has His energies. No?
Yes.
And then superior, inferior, and jiva. So when you say the master of Prakriti, then that will be the Lord Himself. At the same time, is Yogamaya will be the master of, you know, in that way, the internal potencies, external potency, and jiva. So because you have the non-difference between the Lord and His energies, depending upon what they're bringing out, then they bring these points out. Because the point is it's what's being brought out is that He's there and His energies are there. Right, and so He's the Lord of them, and He is the source of them. Right?
Because Krishna has multiple energies, multiple shaktis, And here it has been said that Brahman has three Shaktis according to Shruti and Smriti. Mm-hmm. So three Shaktis means, I was thinking that whether, you know, there are three, whether the Shakti has been classified broadly into three categories, and then the different potencies, you know, they fall under the three categories.
Means? I did catch.
It, let's say, you know, we have Jnana, Bala and Kriya. These are the three broad categories. And then the other Shaktis, they may fall under any one of the three, because that is what the heading says, you know, three Shaktis. But here we find that there are three and three. That is total eight Shaktis are shown in over here. You
know. No, but there's a lot of common elements here, aren't there?
Yeah, commonality is also there.
Yeah, so the whole point is if you have the jiva is mentioned in all of them, so it's not that it's another.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just like we saw before, is that when you have these different aspects, then you're dealing with the. The vibhava, the prabhava, and the anubhava. So they all fit into that same broad character categories of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it's just a matter of which aspect they're bringing out. Right? Does that make sense? So, the internal potency is coming under the prayojana, right? The material energy will come under the sambandha, and the jiva comes under the abhideya, because they're expanded from sat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Sandini's existence. So material existence comes from there, but also spiritual existence. So it's just a matter of where you're applying it.
Okay.
Like that. So existence is there, jivas are there, and the internal potency is there. So, thank you. So in pleasing the Lord, it's always this internal potency. Then you're using other energies to, in the service of the internal potency, to please the Lord. Right? Like that. So that's why they can be on either side. Right? Okay. It is described in scriptures that Brahman is both the efficient cause and the material cause. He is the efficient cause by being the possessor of the para shakti. He is the material cause by his other two shakti. Apara, jiva, and avidya, prakriti. See here, apara means the jiva could be used in towards the para, or it could be used away from and as avidya. So that's then where it comes. So the position of apara in that is important only because there's jivas. As far as internal potency goes, then there's only serving Krishna. There is a rule. Sa visheshana ne vidhi nishedhau visheshanam upasham kramata sati visheshye badhe. Statements of affirmation and denial change the meaning of their particular descriptive elements if there is a contradiction in the principal subject. Nyaya vartika tatparyaya by Vachaspati Misra. It is a contradiction to assert that the Lord can transform, since he is changeless. Thus he transforms via his shaktis related to matter and jiva. It is also said, Yaeko varno bahuda shakti yogad. The Lord is one, but many by the application of shakti. Sreta Supratara Upanishad 4.1. So he transforms through his energies, because what else is there? There's only him. And if he's transforming, the point is, as there's only him, it's the aspect of him that transforms, which is energies. But he is the source of energies, never transforms. Thus, as the efficient cause, Brahman is without change. As material cause, he is subject to change. As the doer, he has a subtle nature, and as the object acted upon, he has a gross nature. In this way, both qualities apply to the one Brahman because of the scriptural example of a lump of clay, Chandogya Upanishad 6.1.1, and the present sutra. Right? So the lump of clay can be made into so many things, but it's still clay. Right, so the nature of clay doesn't change. This conclusion defeats the theory of Vivarta, in which the world exists as a false imposition on Brahman, and not as a transformation of Brahman's Shakti. Footnote 27. Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, rejects the Vivartavad theory and establishes Parinamavad as the basis of material creation. This is coming from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments that if one does not clearly understand the meaning of Parinamavad, or transformation of energy, one is sure to misunderstand the truth regarding this material cosmic manifestation and the living entities. Right? Because then you're not going to understand apara and avidya. Right? Because then we see is that in these various philosophies, they're taking it that the avidya is vidya. Right? Like for the Shaktas, the dasa mahavidya. It's all the different transformations of Maya. These are the main things. So they're taken as the topmost understanding. But that's all avidya, because without its connection to the Lord, it's avidya. So then what is connecting to the Lord is the jivas. So the jivas, when they connect it, then it becomes apara. And if they don't, they become avidya. Does that make sense? Because iron and fire is always going to be iron. It just acts like fire. Yes. Means how much do we need to be
fixed in knowledge of our
relationship with Krishna?
Yeah.
Means you'd have to be very fixed. Because Sthayi Bhava means that one's fixed in a particular attraction to Krishna. So you're aware of a relationship with Krishna. You understand? Or means, are you talking about more this intellectual kind of the gyan? It's only as its purpose is that you don't get distracted. Does that make sense? So just like, let's say we take something like that. Okay, we're not this body. Okay, and so we're the soul. So then we don't really have to follow all these rules of the Vedic culture. And so then we can, and Yukta Vairagya, we can use anything in Krishna's service. And so therefore, I'm going to do this activity that's not actually really recommended. Right? It said, you know, I'm in a particular, according to Shastra, I'm a particular varna or ashram and that, but I'm going to act outside of that because I'm not the body, I'm the soul. Sounds spiritual, no? But the problem is that discerning the difference between matter and spirit, that's spiritual, but it's not transcendental, it's not devotional. And by going against the Shastra, means why would you use the Shastra against the Shastra? Right? So then what's the purpose? To remove the Shastra, and then where do we end up? We use this higher thing to remove the middle thing so we can function at the lower level. That I'm going to do whatever I feel like according to my conditioning. So my mind establishes the authority here. Right? So by understanding according to this, you would know that that is not spiritual at all. It's very mundane. In fact, it's not even pious mundane. It's impious mundane, because it's against the Vedic culture, not accepting the nature of the character of all that. Krishna made the column. He made bricks. He made mud. He made those things. Right? You can't make blankets out of bricks. Right? But you can make a wall out of bricks. You understand? Krishna made that. So we're saying we're not the body, so I can do whatever I want with the body, but the body is still the body. Right? I'm not this car. Does that mean it can fly now? It's still a car. I'm not this rock. Does that mean the rock, it doesn't do rock stuff? Right? You understand? So, it is just another clever way of presenting the modern, politically correct, liberal viewpoint using Vedic philosophy, just like Shankaracharya used Vedic philosophy to present Buddhism. So that's what this does. So you can tell the difference. Otherwise, people go on and they'll discuss this as if it's something solid and real. When it has no basis. Right? What they're looking for is, yes, we're not this body. Therefore, why am I worried about the social prestige? Because the reason I'm saying we're not the body is because I don't want to do the things I should do because the social prestige may be less than what I want to be seen as. Therefore, I can do activities that I see as socially of standard. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's simply mundane pranamoy consciousness. Right? The second level, extended sense gratification. It doesn't even come up to religion, let alone to the spiritual platform, because we're basing the whole, the end game is about the body itself. It's not about the soul. Because the soul, it's not about the connection. How is this pleasing Krishna and all that? So we're simply using philosophy and God to support our lower philosophy. In this area, when it comes to social things, when it comes to chanting and, you know, artik and that, then basically everyone sees it properly and that way they're nicely engaged devotionally. But outside of that, in the indirect, right, the apara aspects, they're dealing with avidya rather than with paravidya. Right? Does that make sense? And so like that, you can just take it and shift it over to, you know, management's going to make everything work. And, you know, can just keep going with all these, wherever we take these modern concepts and try to introduce them into Krishna consciousness as if these are real and the traditional is not, then that's all they're using. They're just misapplying philosophy because they either don't know or they're really clever and know that everybody else doesn't know. One or the other. Does that make sense? So that's the advantage here, so you don't get distracted. Yeah? And you know Krishna's position, and by knowing it's the glories of Krishna, so it's something about Krishna. It's not a problem. But the difference is if you know this or you realize this. Because realizing this, then there's no intellectual process. But if you only know it, then there's an intellectual process. So yes, the intellectual process at some point should stop, and it should just be a realized aspect. Because you see everything is Krishna, so everything reminds you of Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Like the Brajvasis, everything reminds them of Krishna. So that's a realization of all this stuff. Because who's talking all this stuff? Right? It means these purports that we're reading, these are all Brajvasis. You understand? So for them to talk like this stuff is not a problem because they do see everything as Krishna. Everything reminds them as the person. Does that make sense? So we can't say, oh, this is gyan and throw it out and then accept mundane karma and then that's spiritual. But we're throwing out that because that just means our background is not of gyan, it's of karma. And then those whose background is gyan, they'll throw out karma. You understand? And then, you know, the modern just mixes it all, whichever is going to get the best economic and social and sensual benefit. So whichever works, you know, it's like, what do you call it? What was the guy? Bruce Lee? Jeet Kune Do means whatever works. You know, so that's their method. You know, if by quoting the Vedic, then it'll get my work done, I'll quote it. But if by quoting the Vedic it won't, then I'll quote some other modern person who does. You know, so it's not that it's important where the authority is, because our own mind is the authority. So as long as it supports our mind, then it's authority. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments that if one does not clearly understand the meaning of Parinamavada, transformation of energy, one is sure to misunderstand the truth regarding this material cosmic manifestation in the living entities. In the Chandogya Upanishad 6.8.4, it is said, Sanmula saum ye ma praja sad ayatana sat pratishtaha. pratishtaha. The material world and the living entities are separate beings, and they are eternally true, not false. Right, so that's said there, but then Shankara will say, no, it's all false. So we can see it's not actually. Shankaracharya, however, unnecessarily fearing that by parinamavad, transformation of energy, Brahman would be transformed, vikari, has imagined both the material world and the living entities to be false and to have no individuality. Right? Because you have the aspect, yes, they do all come from the Lord, but the point is they also are individuals. That's the point. That's the thing. They both go on. So he emphasizes just the oneness aspect and completely ignores. That's why Prabhupada says exclusive monism, that's bogus. But the point is that where you have the inconceivable balance of monism and dualism, that's that, and they go on simultaneously. It's not one or the other. They're both going on at once. Then everything becomes understood. Does this make some sense? Mm-hmm. Yes.
I've heard the phrase that we can describe ourselves as polymorphic monotheists.
Pari?
Polymorphic monotheists.
Polymorphic.
Is that?
Polymorphic.
Right? Yeah, so like many forms coming from one God.
I think it comes from Garuda Prabhu.
From Garuda?
He coined this term.
Okay. Polymorphic. But then what about the energies? If you're going to get into that detail, then you have to have the Lord and his energies. Because if we say monotheistic, means there's one God. Because for us, that's why we say Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead. So everything is Krishna, so there is only one God. But you have all these different manifestations. But then if we only count the Vishnu Tattva, what about the Shakti Tattva? So I think you'd have to coin a few more. So therefore, Parinamavad works really well. Shakti Parinamavad. We're monotheistic, but if you want to know how all this is, then you have the Shakti Parinamavad. Does that make sense? So Achintabheda Veda Tattva says it all. Like that. Because people go, well, what about all these different options? So you get distracted by that and try to explain that. Don't worry about what people are distracted by. Worry about the original so that they are not distracted. Right? In other words, if they're over here, then you put them over there. It's like the child is going to touch something they shouldn't. So now you can try to stop them from touching that, and it's going to be a scene. Or you can point out something more interesting. Right? They go to touch that, and you go, oh, and then they look, and then now they go into that. You understand? So that's the normal thing, because it's about being involved in the right thing, not about the point. So then we argue over the Vishnu Tattva and this and that, and how can God have it? No, don't worry about that. That's what God is. Worry about that there's the original. So there is only one. Right? Does that make sense? Because if you get up to this Vedantic level explaining philosophy, it doesn't matter who they are. If they're theistic, they'll buy it. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's them. Is that good? Okay. So he's unnecessarily fearing that people would think like that, but you just have to explain it. That's the whole point. Education means you explain. So he's trying to avoid this, but at the same time, in avoiding it, then he creates, you know, the cure is worse than the disease. Like that. Yeah. But, you know, he's been sent to do that, so, yeah.
All right. Something similar was told by Narada Muni yesterday in connection with
Bhagavad. Oh, with the Mahabharata?
Yes.
Okay, because he made the Mahabharata to they know everything, but at the same time it distracts them. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You understand? So it's a common thing is that we're worried about the one thing, but unless we keep the focus on Krishna exclusively, then we'll get distracted, because the tendency is we'll think the secondary is the important. The secondary is what makes the primary. No, the primary exists in its own glory on its own. For us to appreciate it, it's expressed through the secondary, but the secondary doesn't create the primary. That's the meaning of being independent. Like cooking, even if no one on the planet is cooking now, cooking still exists in its primary form. Even if no one cooks for 10,000 years, it still exists. You understand? But when you cook, then cooking is manifest. So we can appreciate cooking. But it's not that by cooking, by using the pots and pans, you've created the principle of cooking. No, that's always there. Does that make sense? You know, like their, what do you call it? You know, I say these so-called super intelligent archaeologists and all that, you know, by an accident they made a fire one day, you know, somebody was the kid was playing with his rock like that and started his, you know, how you say, mom's, you know, skirt on fire or something, and then like that, and so, and then at one point, then they had fire, so it was warm, and then sometimes somebody by accident dropped a dog leg into there and that, and then, you know, not being of the, you know, Brahminical hygienic standards, they just kind of pulled it out and dusted it off, but now it's like cooked, that's better, hey, you know, so, you know, so that means the principle of cooking was already there. It's just that Neanderthal only figured it out by accident. So. Does that make sense? No? Sorry. Yeah, it's always funny is that when you go back, in the historical things, the humans, they don't have much vocabulary and they're pretty stupid. But the prehistoric animals, and they speak really good English, and they're really intelligent. You know? Yeah, I'm not sure how it works, but yes. Yes.
Can we say that Krishna consciousness means to focus on the primary?
See, yes, Krishna consciousness sees Krishna as the primary. Then everything we're dealing with, we can't see the connection to Krishna. Now, of course, we can say it is about Krishna, but we're only remembering at that time. And so that's why you'll see the difference, is that at that moment, when you mention, but how does Krishna fit in? Of course it's about Krishna. That time you're connecting it. Then it becomes a value. But other than that, then you're focusing on it and taking it for granted. Of course it's about Krishna. But the point is if it is, you'd be reminded of Krishna. But instead, we're focusing on the secondary. Because the idea is the more perfect the secondary, then the more perfect is the devotion. Right? So it's not that the better I cook, the better devotee I am. Because it's why am I cooking better? If I think the technique of cooking makes the offering better, then why does Krishna need to eat that? Because it's only technique. And we know that Krishna eats bhakti, not technique. Right? Is that make sense? So that's the whole point. You know, it's just like Prabhupada then was, you know, you mentioned about, I think it was the first vehicle ISKCON had when they, I think, were still on 26 Second Avenue. Somebody joined in that, and they had a bus or something, you know, old school bus converted, you know, like that. And, you know, funky, but, you know, there's a hole in the floor, and you have to put a board over it, and there's no chairs, because hippies just sit on the floor. And so they put a chair in there for Prabhupada, and like that. But Prabhupada, it's Krishna's bus, so he was very happy. He didn't go, what is this trash, you know, like that. It was Krishna's bus. But it doesn't mean that now that's our standard bus now. It's like, oh, we got a problem here. What's that? There's no hole in the floor, and there's seats. Well, take out the seats and, you know, make a hole, you know, like that. You know? I'll go buy the plywood, right? So the thing is, the technique is not the point, but that you want to, since the results for Krishna, you want the best result for Krishna, therefore better technique gives a better result. Therefore, you're trying to apply a better technique simply because you can please Krishna by giving him a nicer offering. But if we get distracted and think it's about the technique, then we've missed the point. That's why it says razor's edge. Because it's just the devotion, and how do you manifest it? Oh, it's just the technique. No, that's why it's right in the middle. And it's as wide as a razor's edge between the two. That's why it's that thin, because it's exact. So if that's appreciated, then you always keep pure devotion. Then you always can deal. So the learning, understanding the philosophy to this degree means to more closely, you can tell something off of the razor's edge. Otherwise, yeah, maybe you can tell, you know, what's off of, you know, one of these new 12-lane highways. You know, yeah, like, well, yeah, that's off, you know, but, you know, anything in between. But the point is it's still, the middle is still the razor's edge. So, you know, 6 lanes this way, 6 lanes that way are still good. After the railing, okay, now that's bogus. So that's the whole idea, is that we can understand more. But it's not that the jnana improves bhakti. It improves our understanding of what is bhakti. And if our intent is to please Krishna, then it becomes engaged. It becomes spiritualized. It becomes bhakti. But if it's a matter of, oh, I'm so intelligent and I'll impress people and this and that, or I'll find fault in others by their, you know, by this, then that's not devotional at all. There's no advantage. Right? That better you know less. You know. Yes.
Sometimes it's said that, the experience is that you get lost in the activity that is devotional service.
Yes.
And in getting lost in that, like the technique, you could say, you yes. forget Krishna yes. while doing this.
Yes, yes, yes.
Is that a problem?
Yes. It means, in the beginning, it means, why are you lost in devotional service? It means the point is you're lost in devotional service. So that's better than being lost without devotional service. Does that make sense? So the point is we're adding devotional service to our lostness. And so we have a tendency to be lost, so even when we're doing devotional service, then we act within that principle. Right? So then we're trying to see that these activities, they are being done to please Krishna. Now the direct activities, if you're lost in them, you're still connected with Krishna. You're chanting, but you're thinking of all kinds of things. You're still connected with Krishna. Right? Hearing Bhagavatam, seeing the deities, serving the devotees, living in the Dham, worshipping Tulsi, taking prasad, these are direct. So even if the consciousness is not right, you're still doing devotional service, though it may not be as good as if you were properly conscious. But when you get into the opera vidya, or the, you know, indirect activities, like, let's say, doing things in your house, if you see it connected to Krishna, it's connected. You don't. It's just a house. You know what I'm saying? That's the difference. So then it's much easier to get lost in the indirect than the direct. Even if you get lost in the direct, it doesn't. It's not good, but it's still, you're getting benefit.
It seems like some activities require a lot of concentration. So how do you get remembering Krishna while, like, if you're driving, you got to focus on the road.
But why are you driving?
Taking the Sankirtan devotees to their...
Yeah, and so then how, since you're taking the Sankirtan devotees, are Sankirtan devotees valuable?
Yes.
Okay, so then does being crazy in your driving or following the rules protect the devotees? Yes, and then the van, who does that belong to? Is it ours or is it Krishna's? So then how would we deal with the van? Would we put petrol in it, or change the tires, or fill them with air, or change the oil, or, you know what I'm saying? Right? We would do all that because it's Krishna's. Right? You know, if it's just, it's a car and it's Maya, then we don't. And then we break down halfway in the road, and then we miss the festival. Right? You understand? So, and the books. You know, so, therefore, and since we're functioning in here, we're functioning within the context of the modern society, so they have the way that they have put the rules together on how people are going to function on the road. And so, therefore, we follow those rules because that is the appropriate social custom to do. Only because Shastra says, you know, you are not neglectful in ordinary dealings. That's Rupa Goswami. Not because the karmis say that it's so important to drive on the right side. Because we know it's actually, you're supposed to drive on the left. Because when you pass people, you're supposed to pass people with your right side to them. So that's respectful. Pass with your left, that's disrespectful. But hey, you know, it's England's known for being more respectful, and when you cross the pond, they're known for being a little less respectful. You know, so naturally they have to switch it, right? You know, I guess too many days on the boat, and they got mixed up, and they couldn't remember which way were they driving. Yeah, so, that makes sense. Yeah, in a sense. So therefore, when you drive that van, you'll be driving that van, you know, nice. It means the police will love you because you're the only one on the road really doing things right. Because that you're doing it for Krishna. And then in the process, you get there properly, the main bus is maintained, no one gets sick and vomits all over the books, and the police don't come and give you tickets, and then no one ends up down at the court or spending a night in jail. You know, so all these different things, are all those come as side benefits that you're doing because of Krishna. You understand?
I think I'm catching it. So while you're doing the activity, it's not necessary to be thinking of Krishna.
It means if you can, nice. But point is you're thinking of how to do this nicely for Krishna. That's why you're doing it. That's why you're not going too fast and you're not changing lanes without putting your indicator and, you know, all doing all weird stuff that, you know. Yes, we'll let you fill in the rest. Right?
What with the direct?
Because the idea is, no, if we get there quicker, then we can do more books. But the point is, if you don't get there because you were too quick, you do even less books. You know, unless you consider, you know, rolling the van and the door opening and the books go flying all over the whole highway is distributing the books, then yeah, then okay, you did a good job there, yeah. You know. But if you wanted people to, and then, yeah, of course, people will come along and pick them up and put them in the truck, and then they'll, who knows what will happen to them, end up as evidence somewhere, get thrown out, or, you know, like that. But,
Agyata Sukrita. Hmm? They're picking up books, so it's Agyata Sukrita.
Yeah, Agyata Sukrita. Yeah, they're touching the books. But, yeah.
But with the direct activities, you can always be thinking of Krishna, yes, much easier.
Yeah, yeah. That's why these things, but if you're doing Sankirtan, then you can remember. It's book distribution, it's Lord by the Lord's grace, because that's the point, it's direct. But yes, like driving and brushing your teeth, these are all indirect, so you can think of something else. That's why this knowledge is aparavidya. You connect it to Krishna, it's called apara. You don't connect to Krishna, it's called avidya. Right. So the jiva is naturally connected to Krishna, so that's why they're apara. But if they don't connect the jiva to Krishna, then they're called avidya, you know, in connection with the material energy. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Apara, we say when we connect it, it becomes para.
Means no, apara vidya is that knowledge which can be connected to para. So para is itself; it takes on the qualities of para, but it's still apara vidya. But if it's not used in connection with para, then the same knowledge is called avidya.
Let's say Ayurved.
Yes.
If you do it to heal devotees.
Yes.
And you remember Krishna, what it would be, still apara?
It's apara vidya. That's why it's called apara vidya. Now, if the same knowledge, if you're just doing it just because you like helping people and all that, then it's avidya. Right? Because you've helped them, yes, temporarily. But you haven't actually done anything for them, you know, as far as the soul goes. That's why Murari Gupta is quoted as a good doctor, because he would preach to them about... Because their lifestyle's bad. Why? Because they're not God-conscious. Because of the God-conscious, you understand, not the body, so the body belongs to Krishna, so I should take care of it since it's not mine. Right? Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Then, Jiva has been called as apara because...
They can be engaged either way. That's why they're tatastha.
Yeah, okay.
Like para is transcendental, avidya is not, and apara means it can go either way. So that's the context of this.
Just on the point you were making earlier about devotion themselves being like a razor's edge, on the one hand you have the devotion, and on the other hand
No. On the edge is the devotion, and then the material quality, you have karma and jnana.
Yeah.
They're the two sides. Okay. By word juggler, he has tried to prove, Shankaracharya, that the individual identities of the living entities in the material world are illusory. And he has cited the examples of mistaking a rope for a snake or an oyster shell for gold. Thus, he has most abominably cheated people in general. Right? So that's why he's unnecessarily fearing, and so then he's come up with this illusory philosophy. Because you say mistaking a rope for a snake. And so in the material world, you're mistaking it for something real, right? And so then they'll say Brahman is real, the material world is false, right? So that's their rope and snake. But what's being missed out in here is they're extending the example beyond its actual usage, and that the only reason you can misidentify a rope as a snake because there is a rope and there is a snake. So if it's just illusion, that means there's nothing. So what are you basing it on? Why does everybody have that same element of illusion? How is there such consistency? Unless it comes from one source. So it means it has to come from Brahman. That means the illusory energy has to come from Brahman, and the jivas have to come from Brahman. Otherwise, each thing would be different. It'd be like, you know, living in a Picasso painting or something. You know? Like that. Yeah? Yeah, that would be, everything would just be weird and different and like that, you know. And then, you know, you're in a Picasso painting and your friends and the neighbors, they're in, you know, DC Comics or something. You know, so it just starts getting weirder and weirder as you go. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, then there's Clockwork Orange. Right?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.